Once upon a time, a long time ago, in a place far, far away where none of us have ever been and none of us will ever go, deep in the counsel of God, a conversation was held. A decision was made that someone had to become somebody, that one of us must go. Who shall it be? And in the sweetest story of all time, the one who made it all became it all to fix it all. Isn't it weird how so many things happened to Jesus on bank holidays? I mean, what are the odds of being born on Christmas? That first Christmas was not a happy affair. In fact, it was a dismal time for these people who told themselves a story. The story they told themselves was that they were special. They were God's select group, that he had smiled on them, chosen them for a particular task. But for 1,000 years, the evidence had not borne out this story they told themselves. For 1,000 years, they had been beaten down, beaten up, kicked out, run over. And now it was the filthy Romans' turn. So here we have this huddled group of people with a story that they are the chosen ones, and yet they're huddled on the shore of the Mediterranean. What else could go wrong? These arrogant Romans with their fancy Caesar salads, their aqueducts and their colosseums. Don't they understand who we are? What else could go wrong? Well, you could live in a little village that had such a bad reputation that all the other villagers had a saying about your village, and the saying was, "Can anything good come out of Nazareth?" What else could go wrong? Well, you could be a young woman and miss a month or two. And the suspicion become confirmed by the bump in your belly in a culture where not only was it an embarrassment to be single and pregnant, but in fact it was a capital offense punishable by death. What else could go wrong? Well, those Romans could turn the screws one more time, raise the tax rate one more percentage. What else could go wrong? Well, they could say, in order to apply this new tax, you have to travel down to your ancestral city of origin. So now you, with the baby now large in your belly, and your fiancé have to walk the 80 miles south to the town where the story had begun 1,000 years before, when a little shepherd boy, a little sheep herder named David had protected the sheep. A little sheep herder from a town named Bethlehem. And that happens to be your town. You travel back to Bethlehem. You register with the Romans. What else could go wrong? Well, perhaps because of your condition, no one will let you into a decent inn. And you have to spend the night sheltered among the animals. What else could go wrong? With all the fears and the pain which naturally accompany the first birth of a child to a young woman, you could give birth to your son. And as you hold him in your arms, and his lungs fill with air that he had designed because he came up with the formula of oxygen and nitrogen and carbon dioxide and helium and argon. And that formula that he had designed filled his lungs as Mary laid him in the stone manger with hay. And hay had also been his idea. And here he is, a little baby. The universe could not keep its mouth shut, and a star burst out to tell the news to anyone who happened to look upward. The womb could not keep its mouth shut, and a cousin was born out of season. The other beings who inhabit the universe with us, we call them angels, could not keep their mouths shut. And they shouted the news to anyone who happened to be outdoors in that evening. The watchers could not keep their mouths shut. Simeon and Anna, when they saw him, said who he was. What else could go wrong? Just when they thought nothing else could go wrong, everything started to go right. Caesar did not know it happened. Herod knew it happened. And the prince of this world hatched a scheme. Herod, fitful in his bed, sent soldiers. An angel warned the father who fled to Egypt, escaping for the first but not the last time the prince of this world's attempt on his life. While the baby grew up, as babies do, became a strong young man, left the carpenter shop and headed toward the river because his cousin was waist deep in the river. His cousin John, the one clothed with camel's skin, the one who ate insects dipped in honey, to be sure. The one who stood in the river and shouted out, "Straighten it out, because he's coming." The story that we've told ourselves for 1,000 years is about to come true, my friends. So if you are a soldier, treat people with dignity. If you have 2 coats, give away one. If you have extra food, share it. But make the pathway straight. Make it level. Get ready. He's coming. And his cousin came to him down the banks of the Jordan River, ankle deep, knee deep, waist deep. John said, "No." Jesus said, John dunked him down in the water of the Jordan River. Jesus burst out. This symbol, isn't it? This symbol of coming alive again. This symbol of, I'm clean. It's a new beginning. All the symbolism of coming up out of the water. And a voice from the counsel of God interrupted this world as we know it. A voice from out there broke into in here. The voice said, "This is my son whom I love. With him I am well pleased." They weren't used to thinking of him as father. It was a new thought. And he called him son. He liked to hang out at the lake. Spent a lot of time at the lake. Hanging out with those who went to the lake, because the lake is where they went to get the water to drink, to wash their clothes. They had to go to the lake, and so he would position himself at the lake, and he would talk to them, not in religious mumble jumble, but he would tell them stories. Stories about another way of living life, about another kind of king. One day, with his back to the water, he was talking to the people about God. And so many came to hear him that they were in danger of actually pushing him backward into the lake. He saw a couple of boats behind him. He said to one of the fishermen who was in the boat, the fisherman was cleaning his nets. He said, "Could I speak to the people from your boat, if you please, the fisherman said. But of course, Jesus clambered into the boat, spoke to the people now from the vantage point of the boat. He was able to project his voice better. After he's finished speaking with them, the crowd dispersed. He turned to the fisherman, whose name was Simon, and he said, "Simon, let's go fishing." Simon said, "It's no use. I've been out all night. They've gone deep. There's nothing there. But because it's you, I'll do it." They turned the boat around, rowed out into deep water. Just out of obedience, Simon throws the nets down in the water, begins to pull them in to show this poor land lubber carpenter what he didn't know about fish. And there is resistance in the nets. There is much flopping and flailing in the nets. He tries to pull them in. He can't do it. The nets are so filled with fish that one man cannot pull them in. So he whistles to his partners. They bring the other boat out. Now there are two boats. Between the four of them, they're pulling in the fish. They can just barely get them in. There's so many fish. I mean, this is not normal. This doesn't happen. There's so many fish. The both boats are almost swamped. Water up to the gunwales. They row back into the shore. They get out of the boat. Jesus climbs out, starts to walk away. Peter follows him, throws himself on the ground in front of Jesus, and says unexpectedly, "Get away from me. The likes of you should not be around the likes of me. I'm a mess." Jesus said, "Yeah. How about we do this? How about you spend the rest of your life helping people out of the mess?" Peter got up, pulled the boat up on the shore, and followed him. Not everybody liked him. In fact, a lot of people didn't like him. People with a vested interest in the way things work right here and now didn't like him, because He smelled like he was from somewhere else. Just had a little bit different take on everything. He was threatening. But if you were beaten up at all, if you were bruised at all, if life had not been fair to you at all, if you'd been hurt as a child at all, if you'd been stained at all, if life had not worked out as you had hoped and dreamed at all, he was pure refreshment. The common people loved him. One day he was crossing the lake with some of these fishermen friends. They got to the other side. As they got out of the boat, here comes a crazy nut job guy running down the hill towards him. Now, not cute nut job, but naked nut job. Not cute and attractive crazy man, but scary, bloody, filthy, smelling of urine crazy man. The kind of smell you only accumulate after long periods of living by yourself amongst the tombs. A man who found more in common with the dead than with the living. A man whose shrieks and screams could be heard in the village day and night. A man who was a cutter. With stones he would cut himself, bleed and bleed, but not die. He was the living dead. And this crazy man comes barreling down on Jesus. Also throws himself on the ground in front of Jesus. He pleads with Jesus, don't send us out of the body. Don't send us out of the body. Jesus says, son, what's going on here? What's your name, son? My name is Legion, because we are many. Well, Legion, I tell you what we're going to do. You can't stay here. Because I came to fix it. Legion pled with him not to be disembodied. The pigs, send us to the pigs. To the pigs with you then. The evil within him abandoned that wretched man, fled to the pigs, and nearly 2,000 pigs, now possessed by evil, ran off a cliff, just like lemmings off a cliff, one after another, dropping into the lake below, drowning. And Jesus picked up this precious man. Said, go home and tell people. People like him liked Jesus just fine. It was hard for them to figure him out. It was not immediately clear who he was. And to help them sort it, he asked the followers one day, well, who do the people, you know, what do they think about me? Who do they say I am? What are the reports out there? The disciples knew it was a bit of a test, and they said, well, some say perhaps Elijah, taken up in a chariot of fire, now back. Others think perhaps the prophet. Others say perhaps your cousin, now recently deceased, may he rest in peace. Jesus said, okay, that's interesting, but what about you in your heart? Who do you, I mean, do you get me? Who do you think I am? Simon the fisherman said, you are the one. You are the hope. You're the one we were waiting for. OMG. He said, for once you got that right. In fact, Jesus said to Peter, and now I'm going to die, and then I'm going to break death. Peter, no, that's not the story. Jesus, shut up, Prince of Darkness. That is the story. Now, you've got to remember, about this time, Moses has been dead well over 1,000 years. So you figure somebody who's been dead 1,000 years is dead, right? They're not going to be popping back, right? They're gone. Elijah has been dead well over 800 years. These people are seriously dead. Their bodies have decomposed. They've made other bodies. They've recycled several times, right? I mean, they're dead. They're dead. So Jesus takes three of the closest followers, goes up a hill one day, and he goes all like shiny. They didn't know how to describe it. Later they said it looked like he was the sun. He's just all brilliant and shiny and he wasn't alone. And in fact, they could tell who the other two standing beside him were. It was Moses and it was Elijah, these many years dead, not dead, coming from out there, and they're all three shiny and talking, and Peter in this one of this confusion, a stupor, Peter says, "This is so cool, let's build three chapels here," and just like that, they're gone. And Jesus is back and he's not shiny anymore. For a second time, a voice came from out there. The voice interrupted reality here. The voice said, "This is my son whom I love. Listen to him." But like I said, not everyone was fond of Jesus. Those who disliked him most were people kind of like me, people who were religious people. Let me give you an illustration. You'll see why they disliked him. One day, one of their religious lawyers came up to him and said, "Okay, Jesus, got a question for you. So, how do you get to heaven?" And they had a little conversation about loving God and loving your neighbor. And Jesus said, "Well, do that. And you'll live forever." The lawyer, looking for an escape, looking for a technicality, said, "All right, but who is my neighbor?" Jesus said, "Well, let me tell you a little story. You know that road that goes from Jerusalem down to Jericho? And you know that bad section of the road in the middle, right where you're coming out of the Judean highlands, almost down to the plain, but there's that bad section with the hills where the bandits tend to hide out? Well, one day a man was going down that road, got to that bad section. In fact, the bandits came out, they jumped him, they mugged him, they stripped him naked, they took all his belongings, they beat him up, they left him for dead beside the road. Shortly after that, the bandits left. Shortly after that, a man, Mr. Lawyer, who looked a lot like you, came down the road. And when he saw that poor bloodied victim by the side of the road, he intentionally ignored him. And he crossed over to the other side and went about his spiritual business. Shortly after that man, who looked a lot like you, came another man who was also a spiritual man who looked a lot like you, and he came down the road, he saw the victim there, crossed to the other side, intentionally ignoring that man in his need. Now, after those two, a third man came along who was, in fact, a Frenchman. And this Frenchman, who didn't know the first thing about Wesleyan theology, saw the victim, went over to him and knelt down beside him, poured oil and wine on his wounds, picked him up, put him on his donkey, led him down to the inn, put him in the motel, gave him his Visa card and said, "Whatever it costs, it's on me." "Now, Mr. Lawyer," said Jesus, "which one of those three understood the simple meaning of the word neighbor?" The lawyer hung his head and said, "It was the French guy." So you can see why they didn't like him. In fact, they began to look for a way to rid themselves of him. I don't have enough time to tell you everything he did. I don't have time to tell you about the water that he turned to wine. Nicodemus at night in the garden. The Samaritan woman by the well. The feeding of the 5,000, the feeding of the 4,000, the mud in the eyes that healed, the looking like trees and now they look like men, the lame who were made to walk, the paralyzed put down through roofs, the miracle upon miracle, the sign upon sign that something from out there had come here. About his friend Lazarus, who had been dead for several days, being brought back to life. It all started to unravel, or perhaps I should say, it all started to be knit together when they brought another group of foreigners to him. These were Greeks, almost as despised as the Romans. They brought the Greeks to him and they said, "These foreigners want to see you too, Jesus." Jesus said, "Now my heart is troubled. What shall I say? Father, deliver me from this hour?" No. It was for this very reason that I've come to this hour. Father, glorify your name. And for the third time, a voice came from the counsel of God, breaking into this world where we thought we were all alone. And the voice said, "I have glorified it, and I will glorify it." The knitting together accelerated. They went to the home of a man named Simon. His nickname was the leper, which suggests a picturesque past. Simon the leper, and they're having dinner. They're seated on the floor, as was their custom. It's a somber meeting because Jesus keeps talking this language of death, and they know it must be a metaphor because they know the story and it doesn't have death in it. So they know it's a metaphor and they're trying to figure it out. What does he really mean? He's been talking this language of death. So they're all there. Into the room comes a woman. A woman is the first one to understand him, to really get him. She has in her hands an alabaster vase or jar. Alabaster, the soft white stone carved out. In it is perfume, but not perfume for parties, but perfume for funeral. She stands over the head of Jesus, and in an act of violence, she somehow breaks this stone vase. The perfume for the dead cascades down on Jesus' head, over his cheeks, down his beard, onto his clothes, staining his clothes. The disciple who was the treasurer, the one they called Judas, jumps up and says, "Woman, what's gotten into you?" Jesus said, "Judas, it's all right. Knock off the singing." "In fact, Judas, she gets me. She understands it's not a metaphor. She has anointed me for my burial in the stone." When eyes turned off him, Judas slipped out into the night. Money changed hands. Sometime that last week, Jesus ate again with his followers. He took the bread and he said, How can I help you see what I'm doing? See this bread? It's my body. Break. Just so you know later, it's on purpose. I'm doing this. See the wine? Just the way wine is poured out, it's my blood. It's on purpose and it's for you. There is a plan here. Sometime that week, he took off his coat and he tied a towel around his waist. He got down on his knees in front of his followers with a basin and washed their feet, saying to them, "This is how you should lead each other." Sometime that week, they sang a hymn and they went down across the valley and they went out to an orchard of olive trees. He said, "Pray with me, won't you?" He went a little further into the grove of trees and threw himself down among the leaves, nose buried in the soil, the acrid smell of centuries of olives. And he cried out to the counsel of God. He said, "Father, I do not want this. What's plan B?" Nevertheless, not what I want, but what you want. He prayed that same plea three times. And then there were torches in the orchard. There were men with swords. There was violence. There was an arrest. And they dragged him off. He was spat upon. He was pummeled. He was pierced. He was bruised. He was lashed. He was broken. And then they strung him up on a tree, nails in the hand, nails in the feet. Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani. The psalm of the abandoned. The psalm of the desolate. My God, why have you forsaken me? And then it was finished. He died. And the universe held its breath. The women got dressed in the dark. They tucked their bottles and bundles under their arms and slipped out into the pre-dawn darkness of post-Passover Jerusalem. The festival was over. The pilgrims would soon be rising and beginning their reverse pilgrimage. The women walked toward the garden. They did not cry because they had no tears left. They had followed him from the north, believing that he was the hope. But they had seen hope die. They had seen where hope had been buried. They had believed, they had really, really believed that this was it, that the stories they had told for 1,000 years were coming true, that they were seeing it, that they were witnesses of it. But obviously they had simply been duped and deceived. They couldn't understand how, but it was clear it had not been true. And now they simply walked to do the decent thing, to put the oil and the spices on his body. The only conversation they had was, who can we get to move the stone so we can get in and anoint the body? When they reached the edge of the garden, it became apparent that something was different. Plants had been trampled. Something had happened in the garden. In fact, they look across the clearing, and now the stone was not where the stone had been. Where the stone had been, there was simply the gaping hole of the tomb recently carved out of solid rock. They looked at each other. Who knows what now? What else can go wrong? They hurry across the opening. They get to the tomb. They duck inside. They see on the ground, on the stone floor, the cloth with which Joseph of Arimathea had purchased just 3 days before. That's there. They see folded the cloth that had been on his head, but there is no body there. They are aware that they're not alone in the tomb, that there are two other beings in the tomb with them. And later, when the women tried to describe what these beings were like, they could only find these kind of words. They said they looked like lightning clothed in snow. We don't think they were from around these parts. Out there came here. And the two beings said to them, well, ladies, what would you be doing here? This is a place for dead people. And he's not dead. He's not dead. So just go tell people about that. The ladies stumbled out now into the early morning light of Jerusalem, confused. Later on that afternoon, many saw him. He was still he, but like a different he. They saw him, but he wasn't quite the same. In fact, some of them walked along a road with him, and they talked with him for quite a while, not even recognizing him, until he took some bread in his hands, and he said, see the bread? And they said, and then he was gone. Because it was, yes, he was he, but it was like he was the better he than they had ever seen he be. He could go through walls. His body didn't have the impediment of the physical, and yet he was definitely physical. They saw him eat a piece of fish. They knew ghosts did not eat fish. He had a stomach and a digestive tract, but he wasn't limited. They looked at his body. They poked in the side. They looked at his hands. They could see the wounds, but he had broken death. He had come from the counsel of God. He had lived among them. He stood before them and he said, I'll be back quite soon. Just when you thought, what else could go wrong? Everything went right. Amen.